Thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's July 2023, and this is episode 347, which is a conversation about euthanasia. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Douglas Grotheis, who is professor of philosophy at Denver Seminary. He is the author of 15 books, including 2022's Fire in the Streets and Christian Apologetics Second Edition. Doug has written an online feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and his article is called Murder by Medicine in Canada and the Threat to America. And you can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. Doug, it's good to have you on again.
Happy to be back, Melanie.
Well, this is going to be a very interesting conversation because we haven't covered euthanasia in some time in the Christian Research Journal. And so I'm looking forward to this conversation. But first, I want to ask Doug just about how, I guess, people in the West have changed how they see death. And I thought this was really fascinating. Back about almost 10 years ago in 2014, Dr. Ezekiel Emanuel, actually, he's a health policy expert and medical ethicist, and actually one of the main doctors who advised former President Obama on his whole Obamacare. And he wrote this article in The Atlantic that got a lot of press because he said that he would refuse all medical interventions, even antibiotics and vaccinations, when he turned 75. Now, he wasn't saying that he was going to, you know, decide to die or anything like that. But he did note even a couple of years ago to reaffirm his view that he didn't think his view was an extreme position. And he also said that he believes older Americans, they live too long in a deteriorating state. He doesn't think that's good. And he actually wrote this, quote, "Doubtless death is a loss, but here's the simple truth that many of us seem to resist. Living too long is also a loss." So that seems very different from a Christian worldview. I mean, is the way that we view life and death different now in the 21st century than it has been in the past? I mean, is living too long a loss? Because some people would think that it is.
Right. Well, I come back to scripture. Ecclesiastes says there's a time to be born and there's a time to die. But a biblical view of life is that human beings from conception onward are made in the image and likeness of God and have a right to live. That's why we have the commandment not to murder. So the issue is whether we hold to a sanctity of life position, that is, that all human life has intrinsic dignity and value, or whether we hold the converse view, which is a quality of life ethic, and that means that human lives are only as valuable as they are subjectively valued or valued by society as a whole. So if you have that latter view, then you're always considering the experience of life or what you contribute to the broader society. Now, I don't think anyone has the obligation to live absolutely as long as possible in any and every situation. C. Everett Koop used to say that physicians are not to do harm and to try to bring health to people, but they don't have any obligation to prolong dying. But the idea that, well, when I turn a certain age, I'm not going to try to preserve my life or bring blessing or goodness to other people anymore because I'm kind of old and in the way, is a very profoundly unbiblical idea. And it's all based on a horizontal view of life. All you're considering is your own experience, the larger society, and you're not considering who you are before God, that you're made in the image and likeness of God. So this quality of life ethic sounds good. We want to have the highest quality of life possible, but it really ends up denying this innate given value that God confers upon us because we're made in the image and likeness of God. It views us really just as evolved animals who make our own subjective and relative choices about our lives and our deaths.
So in particular, how could a worldview like this that is very much not a biblical worldview, not, you know, just looking at quality of life in relation to society and so forth. How could that influence a society's view on euthanasia, for example?
Yes, the idea is that some lives don't really have very much value. So if you decide that you would want to die, then you should be allowed to make that decision, even have a physician assist you in doing that. And that's a big shift from the view that we really have a duty to live for God and for others. As I said, that doesn't mean you'll prolong dying forever. But if you just view human beings in terms of their aggregate value, so to speak, how much value do you add to society, or how much value do you think you have subjectively, then you have no objective sense of meaning or purpose or value or significance. So someone says, well, I'm chronically ill and I don't have a lot of money and I feel that I would be better off dead or other people would be better off dead. Then some societies, as we'll talk about in a minute, Canada, will even make that available to you. So it denies the whole idea of suffering well, of the objective value of human life, and it views everything in terms of, you might say, the psychological and the sociological, not the theological, the relationship to our Creator and Lord.
Well, before we get into just specifics about euthanasia in Canada in particular, and then any ramifications that it has for the United States, why don't you give us a definition of euthanasia? What is euthanasia?
Yes, euthanasia comes from two words, and the words are good death, sort of a strange combination of words. But the euthanasia movement sometimes is called the death with dignity approach. But the actual act of euthanasia is where a physician will give someone a lethal injection in order for them to be killed. So this could be active euthanasia, where someone is directly killed through an intervention, or what is sometimes called passive euthanasia. And that's a little trickier, because withholding treatment may not be morally wrong per se. But the idea of euthanasia is that of a physician reversing his or her historic role and identity, and instead of trying to provide help and health and do no harm, actually brings about the death of a patient. So it turns one who should be a healer into a killer.
This is really interesting. Before I want to, you know, get into your article, because it seems like how physicians are handling various medical ethical issues has shifted from the past about, you know, just in different kinds of things that we're seeing in society. I know you've written about it with regard to transgender surgeries and things like that. This has been a very interesting shift, but it wasn't always that way as terms of medical ethics and how people approached treating patients. Is it because we have a different view, as you were talking about just a few minutes ago, about who the human person is?
Well, it is, because in the West, there's something called the Hippocratic Oath, which actually predates Christianity, but Christians appropriated it. And the idea, there's a lot to the Hippocratic Oath, but the essential idea is that physicians should do no harm. That is, they should not hurt their patients. They should attempt to help and encourage their patients. And of course, with a Christian worldview, if you have the idea of the image of God, we're all made in the image and likeness of God, plus Jesus' command to love your neighbor as yourself, then a physician would have to fit his or her calling into those categories, into those objective moral values. Now, if those are gone, and if we have no special standing in creation, and if love can mean just about anything, subjectively, or if the whole idea of love is just socially constructed and not based on the character of God himself, then we find these reversals where physicians who should be ministering to and caring people for people actually end up being, in some cases, killers and bringing about the death of people. I was talking to a physician recently in Canada, young Christian man, and he said in all of his medical school training, he was never given any philosophy of what it means to be a physician. It was all about technique and staying within the law. And maybe the subtext is making quite a bit of money. Now, this young man is a Christian, so he has a Christian philosophy of being a physician. But he said that in all of his medical school training, he was never really given any objective account or any guidance about what it means to be a physician. It was just assumed that you are there to do what patients want and to stay within the limits of the law and so on, but no compelling vision for what it means to be a physician. So we definitely need Christians who are called and gifted in these areas to go into the various fields of medicine with a very strong sanctity of life ethic to be a counter to the kind of quality of life ethic which actually ends up decreasing the quality of life by not treating people as unique subjects, unique items of value in God's universe.
Well, you mentioned that you were talking to a physician in Canada. So coming to your article that you wrote for us about euthanasia, how did you even get interested in this topic at all?
Yes, well, I first got interested in this many years ago when I read the book by Francis Schaeffer and C. Everett Koop called Whatever Happened to the Human Race, which was about the decline in our understanding of human beings as having objective value. They looked at abortion, infanticide, and euthanasia. So that was 1979. I've been very concerned about all these issues ever since. And it's interesting that in that 1979 book, when they talked about euthanasia, they talked about euthanasia for the very old. That is the idea of people who are declining, don't have very long to live. But now we're seeing this applied to people at all ages, especially in Canada, as we'll talk about in a moment. But I was asked to give 5 talks in Canada recently for the Christian Medical and Dental Association. And I gave 2 talks on basic apologetics and 3 talks on moral issues. And I began to study what was going on in Canada, which is a very secular country, even more secular and secularizing than the United States. And I found out that since 2016, over 30,000 people in Canada have been legally euthanized under something called Medical Assistance in Dying. And it has this euphemistic acronym called MAID. So I began to study this. I spoke on it there in Canada, and I interacted with quite a few physicians about the situation that they're facing, which is really quite grave. And the grim rationale that has gripped Canada could easily come to the United States as well. And it already has in some cases, in some ways.
I hope by now that you've heard our very big news that the Christian Research Journal is now officially an online magazine. We have new articles coming out every week, no subscription required. It's free for everyone at equip.org. And please do help other people find our online magazine and this podcast, Postmodern Realities, by rating or reviewing us at Apple Podcasts. A quick sentence about why you think people should listen to the podcast and these author interviews would be greatly appreciated. The other way you can partner with us, as always, is give us a tip. And you can do that at our website, equip.org. Go to Journal, hit Postmodern Realities Podcast, and you'll see a way in which you can tip us at the link. And of course, we are so grateful and thankful to you for your partnership. Simply telling a friend, getting the word out is really so helpful to us. And now back to my conversation with Dr. Doug Grotius about murder in medicine in Canada and the threat to America. You just kind of expanded the acronym that's in your article called MADE. And give us a little bit of a background to this program. How was it started? And it doesn't seem like, do a lot of people know about it? Is it something that's readily promoted that is available to patients?
Well, it is. It started in 2016, and the Canadians were assured by Justin Trudeau that it would never be encouraged for people who are not getting the care and concern that they need. It would only be given to people in extreme kind of situations. And that has not proven to be true at all. I've got examples in the article of people who were encouraged by the civil government to be euthanized. And it's been about 30,000 Canadians who have been legally put to death by medical doctors since 2016. I mean, that's the size of a small town when you think about it. So let me give you a quote from an article I have in my article by Alexander Rakin. A number of recent news articles have reported on Canadians who, driven by poverty and a lack of access to adequate health care, housing, and social services, have turned to the country's euthanasia system. In multiple cases, veterans requesting help from Veterans Affairs Canada, at least one asked for PTSD treatment, another for a ramp for her wheelchair, were asked by caseworkers if they would like to apply for euthanasia. How horrible, right? Instead of helping the least of these, as Jesus said, the downcast, the outcast, the disadvantaged, the civil government is saying, well, you're having troubles and you're unhappy, so why don't you apply for euthanasia? Just horrendous. But it's become very common now in Canada. I keep saying this number, 30,000 people. And unless something significant happens, it will just keep increasing. And the rationale would be, this is an easy way out. If you think your life doesn't have that much value, and if other people are not going to stand up for you and stand out for you, and if they're going to recommend this, and if it's supposedly a simple, easy way to end your problems, then why not?
So when we think about these kinds of things, we also think about doctor-assisted suicide. And just in our conversation about the human person, first of all, it's a very serious issue. There is a lot of suicide that goes on, even among younger people. So why don't you give us just an overview of why, from a Christian worldview, suicide would not be good, why it would be morally wrong?
Right. Well, some people say, it's my life, it's not your life. So if I decide to end my life, that's none of your business. And I have the right to do this. I've even heard Christians say this. Now, what we need to do is go back to the Ten Commandments and go back to the commandment that you shall not murder. Well, you could murder someone else. You could murder your neighbor, or you could turn it on yourself. That is, you could murder yourself. You could be the agent that ends your own life. So ending another person's life unjustly is homicide. Ending your own life willfully is suicide. Or you could call it self-slaughter. St. Augustine wrote about this, because there were some early Christians who were so eager to be martyred that it was really tantamount to suicide. And Augustine said, no, you are a human being made in God's image and likeness. No one should murder you, nor should you murder yourself. So we need to have a big heart for people who are suicidal, certainly. However, morally, we need to say that this is objectively wrong. I was asked once in a question answer time about suicide, and someone said, I don't know who it was, I was given the question, is suicide the unforgivable sin? That is, if you commit suicide, you go directly to hell. And I said, if you're a Christian, I don't think so, because Christ's death on the cross covers all of our sins. And then it was almost like the Holy Spirit kind of tugged me on the sleeve and said, wait a minute, someone's thinking of doing it. So I said, even if it is forgivable, it is certainly still morally wrong. It's never necessary. And you leave a terrible hole in the world and end up hurting a lot of other people by doing this. So we need to have our moral categories in place here. Who is God? Who are we? What is the basis of morality? And morality is really summed up in the Ten Commandments, and very forthright, of course, in the Ten Commandments is the command, you shall not murder. You should not murder anyone else. You should not murder yourself, which is suicide. Nor should a physician help someone murder themselves. That really combines suicide and homicide, you know, two sins for one.
How would you answer the person, maybe they were thinking that at the Q&A, where they have had a family member or their child or their spouse has committed suicide, and they're very distraught that perhaps that person has committed the unforgivable sin?
Right. Well, the real issue is whether that person was a follower of Christ, whether they believed in the death of Christ as sufficient to forgive them of their sins and give them eternal life. If so, then I'm sure the first word of the Lord would be, you left this world in the wrong way. But as Francis Schaeffer used to say, the death of Christ has infinite power. That is, it has the power to forgive all those who come to Christ of every sin. So we could rest assured that such a person would be with the Lord. However, we need to articulate a biblical ethic of the value and significance of human life. And if we are tempted by suicidal thoughts, we have to go back to first things, that there is hope in the Lord. The Lord provides a way, and the way is never to kill yourself.
But what about the person who is a Christian and has just an incredible amount of physical suffering due to, you mentioned earlier, a chronic illness or something like a disease, and maybe they've even been given a terminal diagnosis and they feel like they can't go on any further? What would you say to them if they think, you know, I cannot take this pain anymore. I can't continue on.
Well, those are tragic situations. However, with modern medicine, we have palliative care, and much of that pain can be taken away. But it's never the solution to kill oneself or to have a physician help you to die. Moreover, as my grandmother used to say, this too shall pass. This is not forever. And especially for the Christian, we realize that all pain, all tears are temporary. And if we know Christ as Savior and Lord, then when we die, when we leave this body, we go directly to be with the Lord. And that's far better than being here, as Paul says. And our ultimate destiny is to be in resurrected bodies in the new heavens and the new earth. 1 Corinthians 15, Revelation 21, 22, and so on. Jesus said, I go to prepare a place for you. And that place is a lot better than here. So we need courage, and we need the willingness to suffer well and to continue to testify to God's faithfulness, no matter what. But I'm not advocating for some kind of a stern moralism where you simply say, well, this is your duty to suffer and then die. We need to have great compassion and concern. My own first wife died a very long, slow death from dementia. And it was extremely difficult, but we knew that we had to let the disease take its course, and we could not somehow say, well, this is unbearable, we need to end it through euthanasia. Euthanasia, or I should say, we need to make this distinction, doctor-assisted suicide is legal in Colorado, but that doesn't mean it's moral. There are a lot of things that are legal. I live in Denver, Colorado, correct?
So you and your late wife could have chosen that. Like, people can choose that in your state.
I think as of 2018, that's right. Now, Rebecca died in July of 2018. I don't remember if it was legal at that point or not, but my role as her husband was to love and care and support her as best I could and suffer with her and try to give her hope, but it was not to somehow end it by the human means.
And, you know, people always kind of bring up, you know, outlying cases, but they'll say, but certainly you can't apply that to some of those cases that have been in the news where people, you know, they're in some kind of accident or they've been in a vegetative state, because frankly, at the end of the day, it's, you know, not the family that's paying for it. It's the state or Medicare or Medicaid or the government that's paying to keep this person alive, and they don't really have any brain activity. So why should they be kept alive at all?
Well, let me go back to something you said. It's a term I don't actually accept, although it's commonly used, persistent vegetative state. Human beings are not vegetables. They cannot possibly be vegetables. So however compromised someone's brain may be, they are in their being ontologically not a vegetable. They are still made in the image and likeness of God. Now, you have to view cases individually. And I don't think that life-sustaining measures should always be taken in every case simply to keep someone alive as long as possible. It could be that some means are withdrawn because the person's case is, humanly speaking, apart from a miracle, hopeless. So I don't think that is in itself necessarily wrong if a person is legitimately in a terminal situation and where you're really just prolonging the process of dying as opposed to really offering life. But still, in that case, a physician should not directly bring a life to an end. I take that to be unjust killing.
So that's really helpful, I think, for people to think through all of these different, I know people are probably listening to it, thinking through all these different situations. And thinking about, again, I think we don't realize that we might not have a Christian worldview, that we're looking at something from a quality of life point of view, not from the value of a human life. So with regard to MAID that's in Canada, do you envision it coming as an option in the United States?
Well, it very well could come here because we already have a number of states that have something similar, which is doctor-assisted suicide. Now, that's where a doctor will prescribe can't really call it a medicine, but really a poison, which the patient himself or herself will take. So the physician assists in the suicide, but does not directly administer the poison. The direct administration of the poison is called euthanasia. And it's interesting that in Canada, where they have this medical assistance in dying, 30,000 people, as I said, have taken this option. And as I mentioned in my article, California, which has roughly the same number of people as Canada, does not have euthanasia, but it does have doctor-assisted suicide. And the numbers are far less. So why would that be? I was talking to a physician in Canada about this. And it makes perfectly good sense. The idea of being treated by a physician is socially acceptable. So we see a physician, we get an examination, or we're treated for one problem or another, or we're prescribed something. So this has a kind of social acceptability, whereas there's still a bit of a stigma, I think, for suicide. But if you have a physician administer a drug that kills you, he or she has the white coat on, so to speak, physically and also socially. And so people may be much more agreeable to that because it seems to kind of fit into the overall medical model. Now, it doesn't actually, because the physician is doing exactly opposite of what he or she should do. But given that there's still kind of a moral censure against suicide, if you say, well, it's not suicide, it's just a physician is helping me to end my life or free me from my pain, that may be seen as more acceptable. So one of the reasons I wrote this article is not only for my concern for people in Canada, but my concern for people in the United States, because we have already embraced a quality of life ethic a very, very long time ago. And I could see some of these states that now have doctor-assisted suicide, like California, like Colorado, switching and saying, well, why don't we make it easier? Instead of just having a physician prescribe the drug given certain conditions and have the person take the drug and commit suicide, why not have the physician provide the actual act? And of course, euphemisms would be used everywhere, just as it is the case in Canada. You know, instead of a mass euthanasia, it's medical assistance in dying. So I'm sure some term like that would be used in the United States as well. So I'm hoping that what's happening in Canada, first of all, will be reversed and they will embrace a more sanctity of life ethic as opposed to quality of life. And I'm hoping that this does not come to the United States. And of course, I'm obviously against doctor-assisted suicide as well.
You were talking about social acceptability, and I just think the full term for MAID, you know, the medical assistance in dying, it just sounds like a medical procedure, similar to abortion. This is not, has nothing to do with persons. It's a medical procedure that someone is doing for various different reasons that might not necessarily impact their health per se. It could be for, you know, social reasons that they're doing or their own, you know, personal circumstances. So what can Christians do to stop MAID, to push back against this, and really to support the sanctity of life? Because normally when we talk about sanctity of life, I think most Christians put that, you know, term or phrase around abortion, but they don't really think about this idea of medical assistance in dying, especially if the person is suffering. And again, in similar to abortion, people would say, well, that's their choice. They don't want to continue, you know, you're asking them to a life they don't want to continue living. They wish they would end their own pain, and it's their body.
Mm-hmm. Well, we need to get back to essential, fundamental biblical categories of reality about the existence of an infinite personal God who gave us objective, intrinsic value, that murder is always wrong, that the calling of a physician is to heal, not to kill, and so on. And I think we also need to try to move away from this essentially hedonistic view of life, that the main goal of life is to experience pleasure and to avoid pain and suffering. We should try to avoid pain and suffering as much as possible, but also it's a fallen, broken, wounded, groaning world. So we need to have a way of suffering well for the glory of God and the good of others. But if people say, well, it's my life, it's my body, well, it isn't actually. You didn't create yourself. God created you. And you're part of a broader, larger community. You're not just an isolated individual in a void or in a vacuum. So Christians need to vote wisely, advocate wisely. I hope more Christians will go into medicine with a strong biblical Judeo-Christian ethic of the value, the sanctity of human life. And I hope we can somehow turn the tide on this culture of death, as Pope John Paul II put it about 25 years ago, with all the medical advances and the ability to help people and save people. At the same time, medicine can be turned against human beings, as in abortion, infanticide, and euthanasia. And if you can, I encourage people to go back and read that book by Francis Schaeffer and C. Everett Koop, who would go on to become Surgeon General under Ronald Reagan. That book is called Whatever Happened to the Human Race. And they called it. They knew what was happening at that point. Only, if I can say only, about 6 million human babies had been aborted since Roe v. Wade in 1973, only 6 million. The total is now way over 60 million. And we are just seeing the loss of a sense of the sanctity and value of human life across the board. And Jesus said that we needed to treat the least of these as we would treat him. So we need to be concerned about the outcast, the marginalized, those who are defenseless, the unborn, the ill, the mentally ill, and so on. And do all we can to be salt and light in this world, no matter how rapidly it's going in the wrong direction. We need to stand faithful in the power of God and have a biblical worldview and relate it constructively and courageously to the world in which we find ourselves.
Well, on a much lighter note, I have a question, fun question for Doug, because it's summer. So this is about summer desserts. Are you team ice cream or team s'mores?
I love ice cream. Yeah, bring on the ice cream. Yes, indeed.
Well, thanks, Doug, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to episode 347 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest is Professor of Philosophy at Denver Seminary, and Dr. Douglas Grotheis has written an online feature article for the Christian Research Journal. His article is called Murder by Medicine in Canada and the Threat to America. And you can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. Stay connected with the Christian Research Institute and all the new content we have coming your way. The best way to do that is to head on over to our website, equip.org. There you will find thousands of free resources right at your fingertips, from articles to video to audio, and it's all for free. You'll find our podcasts hosted there, as well as the Bible Answer Man broadcast, which is hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff and streams live every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern. In addition, you don't want to miss out on subscribing to Hank Unplugged, which is the podcast of Hank Hanegraaff. And in that podcast, he has really in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people. And in addition, he has a new series on his podcast feed called Hank Unplugged Shorts, which Hank goes into the headlines in the mainstream media and refutes a lot of those cultural issues that we have in these short podcast episodes. And there's quite a few of them. You don't want to miss out on them. Now, if you want to find some of this at other places where it's all in one place, really subscribe to our YouTube channel. It's a great way to get all of our content there, our podcasts there, and different individual questions theologically that people have that Hank answers at our YouTube channel. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, I don't know how to subscribe to YouTube. I don't have a YouTube account. Well, actually, you might just have a YouTube account. If you have a Gmail address, you have a YouTube account. Just log into YouTube with your Gmail address and search for Bible Answer Man channel, and please become one of our subscribers. In addition, if you see that bell icon right there on our front page, please click that, and every time that we have new content, you will receive a notification that new content is up on our channel for you to be able to consume. So thank you so much for the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute. We are grateful for you listening and reading and watching.